This is The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick, filling in for John Hockenberry. Thank you so much for being with us today. The country is spending another week poring over connections between President Trump and Russians. This latest episode, thanks to an acknowledgement from his son, Donald Trump Jr., that he attended a meeting in June that he knew was all about getting help from the Russian government for his father's campaign. The news was shocking to a lot of people, but the relationship between President Trump, his real estate business, and Russians is nothing new. Back in 2008, Donald Trump Jr. told a real estate conference, "Russians make up a pretty disproportionate cross-section of a lot of our assets. We see a lot of money pouring in from Russia." That story has roots that go back into the 1980s, early in Donald Trump's real estate career. In a piece out today, the New Republic documents how Donald Trump's buildings, condos, and hotels have served as a landing spot for money from Russian oligarchs and people with close ties to Russian organized crime. The New Republic says those investments are so pervasive, in fact, that Donald Trump could never have survived in real estate or on television without hundreds of millions of dollars pouring out of Russia and into his projects over the decades. Here's President Trump in his interview with NBC's Lester Holt back in May.
I have had dealings over the years where I sold a house to a very wealthy Russian many years ago. I had the Miss Universe pageant, which I owned for quite a while. I had it in Moscow a long time ago. But other than that, I have nothing to do with Russia.
Other than that, I have nothing to do with Russia, the president says. Eric Bates is editor of The New Republic, and he's here in the studio with me now. Eric, welcome.
Good to be here.
There has been this question really throughout the campaign that's been thrown at Donald Trump throughout the campaign and the early part of his presidency. How much do you have invested in Russia? And one of the bottom lines of this piece seems to be that that question really misses the mark. The real question that you raise here is not how much Donald Trump has invested in Russia, but how much Russians have invested in Donald Trump.
That's right. We decided to go back and look at the public record to try and answer that question. What does Trump owe the Russians? How much of his business has come from Russia and in what form? And we were really struck that what's already a matter of public record shows that his entire business really depends on money from Russia and investment from Russia, a lot of which is either known or alleged to be connected to the Russian mafia and to the oligarchs who really rule Russia.
We should say at the start here, because that is laid out in great detail in this piece, that there's no evidence that the president knowingly dealt with Russian mobsters or in any way participated in their illegal activity.
That's right. We make that very clear high up. It is very clear, though, from the record that Trump hobnobbed with a lot of these guys. And after their mob ties or their criminal activities came to light, he continued to hobnob with them. So he may not have known at the time, but even after some of their criminal activities came to light, he didn't disassociate himself from them.
So let's start in the 80s, which was a critical moment in the career of Donald Trump, when Russians first started investing in the famous Trump Tower.
That's right.
Including some very shady characters and some characters who are more than shady. They're known racketeers and mobsters.
Right.
Why did Russians start buying at Trump Tower and other Trump properties in the 80s?
Well, they really started buying at Trump Tower right from the get-go. And one of the central reasons was that at the time, Trump Tower was set up to be one of the only two residences, apartment buildings in New York City that you could buy units in anonymously. So that made it an ideal vehicle for money laundering. And the Russian mob had a lot of money to launder at the time. So they would buy these apartments in Trump Tower, wait for the property values to go up, sell them, and then their money is suddenly clean. We document the case in 1984 of a guy named David Bogatin. He had arrived in New York City practically penniless, I think he had $3 in his pocket. 7 years later, he walks into Trump Tower, plunks down $6 million to buy five condos in Trump Tower.
Five
condos.
Why would someone buy five condos?
There's really no reason except if you had a very large family or you wanted to launder a lot of money. Trump personally attended the closing with Bogatin, and it then turned out that Bogatin was in fact connected to the Russian mob and was using the apartments to launder money for the mob, and his apartments were seized because the FBI said that that's what they had been used for.
So were there other Bogatins at this time? Was he alone in this type of activity?
As best we can tell, that was sort of the beginning of the process. Bogatin had ties directly back to a guy named Semyon Mogilevich, who was considered the boss of bosses of the Russian mob. Bogatin's brother had run a racketeering operation with Mogilevich. And this began a process where Mogilevich's sort of henchmen, who he had sent over to the United States, began to use Trump properties, including Trump casinos, as money laundering operations.
So that's the 80s, the beginning of this story. But then you tell the story that in many ways is about the 90s, because Donald Trump, the real estate developer at that time, crashes. His businesses owe billions. He's personally on the hook for something like $800 million in debt. At the same time in Russia, the ruble crashes, and there's this perfect storm of events. What happens in the 90s?
So when the ruble crashes, a lot of money starts to leave Russia. Experts have estimated that since the 90s, something like $1.3 trillion has flown out of Russia, and all of that money had to go somewhere. At the beginning of that period, as you say, Trump was really in trouble, and he started to build a place called Trump World Tower. It was going to be the world's largest residential building. He finished it in 2001, right after his first run that most people forget about for the president on the Reform Party ticket. And immediately, the Russian cash flows in. A third of the units on the priciest floors get bought up by Russians. The real estate brokers kind of can't keep up with the demand. They're selling to Russians right and left. This property, for some reason, is really hot with Russians, including some who later prove to have ties with the mob or are assassinated on the streets. So from that, I think Trump apparently sees a business model, because he then begins to make this a really fundamental part of his operation. He does a deal in Sunny Isles, Florida, which is just outside of Miami, to build a condo there with his name on it. He doesn't have to put up a penny, but he's going to get a big chunk of the profits. And once again, the Russian money flows in. A third of the units are bought up by Russians. Some 700 of the units are bought by these shadowy kind of shell companies that are designed to hide the true identity of the owners. Something like 65 people in those units are found to have ties to organized crime. So the whole business model of Trump becomes one of Russian money flowing into his property.
So we've been to the 80s. We've been to the 90s. The 2000s sees a lot more real estate activity, of course. We're just up the street here in New York from a grand, tall building, the Trump Soho Hotel, which has a story of its own.
Yeah, the Trump Soho is particularly interesting. Trump was approached by two businessmen from Russia, both of whom had ties to some of the most corrupt oligarchs in Russia. And they again offered him this deal where we'll build a bunch of buildings, including the Trump Soho. You'll take a big chunk of the profits. You don't have to put up a dime. All we want is your name. He became very friendly with these guys. In one case, he went to one of their daughter's weddings and her son's bris. In another case, he was taken to a lot of business meetings with Russians and kind of introduced to a lot of Russian investors. At the center of this was a guy named Felix Sater. Felix Sater ran the operation for these two Russian businessmen, and he became very, very friendly with Trump. He worked in Trump Tower. He flew around with Ivanka and Donald Jr. By his own testimony, popped in and out of Trump's office all the time to discuss business deals. He himself had family ties to Mogilevich. His father was apparently a mob boss for Mogilevich. He spent a year in prison, Felix Sater, for stabbing a guy in the face with a broken margarita glass in a bar fight, and then was busted in a racketeering league, got out by turning informer. So this is the guy who's popping in and out of Trump's office, hanging out with him, doing business with him, helping to build the Trump Tower. Trump, in a deposition, later said, oh, he could barely remember the guy, couldn't identify him if he was in the room. But even after Sater's criminal act pass came to light, he continued to be close to Trump. He was given a Trump business card from the Trump Organization, and apparently was involved in the Michael Flynn imbroglio, helped draft a plan that was given to Flynn to lift sanctions on Russia. So not only was doing business with Trump, but it was influencing Trump's policy once Trump took office.
So Eric Bates, all of these names and characters, some of them shady, many of them criminals, in and out of the picture here that you've drawn for us. Over the arc of this story, how important is Donald Trump's credit, his ability to borrow from the types of banks that usually finance real estate deals and international deals? How important is that factor?
Well, it's important because he had really lousy credit during much of this time, and because a lot of his businesses were going through bankruptcy. So he was in constant need of big infusions of cash. He needed money to keep flowing in. He had personally vouched for a lot of the debt, so he was on the hook for it. So that's why the Russian money is so important, because it propped up his business time and again at very crucial junctures. Equally important is it helped burnish his image. A lot of the Trump operation, as has been well documented, ran on the image of Donald Trump. There was no reality to it, but as long as people kept believing, he could keep making money. And the Russian money kind of helped set him up to look like a successful businessman. At one point in the story, we write about how the Russian money was really, in a way, responsible for his becoming the star of The Apprentice. Because at the time, as you said, his business was about to fail. The Russian money saved him. It created this comeback narrative. I'm the smart, genius businessman who was on the ropes, but I fought my way back using only my business savvy and my New York toughness. The part that he leaves out of that equation is Russian money. And without the Russian money, there wouldn't be a Donald Trump as we know him.
So the bottom line for you, Eric Bates, whether he knows it or not, how important has Russian money, and more than that, Russian organized crime money, been to Donald Trump?
The Russian money, and a lot of it from organized crime and the mob, has been absolutely crucial to making Donald Trump the man we know today. It bolstered his business at a time it was about to fail. It helped launch his career as a reality TV star, and it effectively helped launch his campaign for the presidency, because without that Russian money, Trump wouldn't have the narrative that he has of being such a brilliant businessman.
And before I let you go, I want you to listen to this statement from the president himself in May on NBC once again.
I have had dealings over the years where I sold a house to a very wealthy Russian many years ago. I had the Miss Universe pageant, which I owned for quite a while. I had it in Moscow a long time ago. But other than that, I have nothing to do with Russia.
Eric Bates, based on your reporting at the New Republic, is that a lie?
Yes, I think that's absolutely a lie, or it's a downplaying, it's a distancing of himself from something he knows to be true, which is that he actively sought out business in Russia almost from the beginning of his career as a real estate developer, depended on that money for his business. The part of it that's most shocking is for him to say that we stayed away from Russia. He went to Russia personally and courted business from Russia assiduously throughout his entire career.
Eric Bates is editor of The New Republic. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.